Nancy by the Masters Golden Institute. Christopher Stevens.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you're here. You can help me settle an argument. Ray Galton and Alan Simpson have been helping me for 3 or 4 years with a biography that is based on excerpts from their colossal script archive. As quickly as the BBC was busy erasing everything that was being put down on tape, they were quietly ferreting away all of their scripts. And in the basement, under Ray's enormous home on the banks of the Thames, there is a cellar which is packed floor to ceiling with filing cabinets. And in those filing cabinets, dozens and dozens of drawers packed to the seams, there are every single show that they have written since 1951. It's the most extraordinary archive imaginable. Not to mention, and these haven't been fully sorted out yet, this is my next job, all of their cuttings, their newspaper cuttings. And I've been visiting them on Mondays usually, because they normally get together on Monday. Alan insists this is because his cleaning lady kicks him out on a Monday so that she can do the kitchen. Anyway, they get together about lunchtime on a Monday, and Ray pours coffee. Ray does the most fantastic coffee. You don't sleep for 3 or 4 days afterwards, but my God, it's good stuff. And we sit for the whole afternoon and on into the evening, and they just talk, and they have the most wonderful fund of stories about every performer that you've ever imagined since the war. And at some point, we fall out. This invariably happens because I always say, as you're the guys who invented sitcom, in fact that's what I wanted to call the book, The Men Who Invented Sitcom. And I can see Alan shaking his head now, so we just started this off again, but they say they didn't. They say it was Shakespeare, or possibly Aristophanes. Maybe as late as Dickens, but definitely somebody 19th century or earlier. They couldn't possibly be then. They weren't born till the 1930s, they said. And I try to point out that although Aristophanes, for example, didn't have a television. And the sitcom is a television, a quintessentially television format. And so we look at the evidence. The first 200 or so scripts in that archive are shows that were written for, mostly for Tony Hancock, and for Charlie Chester, and also for Frankie Allen. And they are what you would call variety shows. Some of them are half an hour, most of them are an hour. They are a sequence of monologues, sketches. Intermittently, there are songs, there are lots of gags. You don't associate that kind of writing with Ray Galton and Alan Simpson. Believe me, they were very, very good at it. They were gag writers before they did anything else. When they left the tuberculosis sanatorium where they met in the 1940s. Look at them now. You can't believe that Ray was given 6 weeks to live in 1948, can you? They developed a passion for comedy writing through listening to hospital radio. It was an unusual sort of hospital radio because it had been taken out of a Lancaster bomber and wired through all the wards. But because they couldn't always pick up things like Forces and World Service comedy shows, they also tried their hand at broadcasting themselves. Sometimes they would do a seat in the circuit, it was called, or one of those commentary things where instead of watching a film, it was a film on the radio, if you like, cinema on the radio, they would watch the movie and describe it as they went through. And they also wrote four sitcoms, very prototypical early ones, which imagined things going completely upside down in the sanatorium, all the doctors having to go to bed and the patients looking after them, that sort of thing. And they wrote to Frank Muir and Dennis Norton, who we were talking about earlier, Barry, and they said, "Could we be your script boys? Could we come and make the tea?" And Frank and Dennis had a method of dealing with people who wanted advice. They had a great letter, which was pretty much a pro forma letter that they sent out, saying, "These are the people at the BBC that you need to contact." One of them was a guy called Gail Pedrick. Ray and Alan took that seriously. They wrote some one-liners for Gail Pedrick, sent them off. One of them really knocked Gail out. It was in a sketch about pirates, and the captain rushes up on deck and the crew are nowhere to be seen. They're all down below in the hold. Somebody shouts out that they're playing Jane Russell pontoon. What's that, says the captain? It's the same as ordinary pontoon, but you need 38 to bust. Still getting the love. And on the strength of that, they started writing one-liners for a guy called Derek Roy, who was a big name back in the early 50s, forgotten now. Derek Roy was doing a show called Happy Go Lucky that was anything but. He was dying on its feet. Ray and Adam were drafted in as the emergency scriptwriters to try and save that show. And that was the beginning of a whole series of variety shows that introduced him to Tony Hancock and to a producer called Dennis May Wilson, who was working on The Goons. And they had an ambition to do something completely different, without the musical interludes, without the one-liners, without the punchlines, without the silly voices, without the surreal characters. They wanted to do realistic comedy based on ordinary working-class lives, with scripts that were rooted in working-class argo, the way that people really spoke. Not received pronunciation, but regional accents, the kind that you didn't hear on 1950s radio. And they wrote a show for Tony Hancock with Mae Wilson's backing. It wouldn't have been possible without that BBC producer pushing for them to get the show. That was called Hancock's Half Hour. And it's still broadcast on BBC 4 now, repeated every month, and it has, as it has been for almost 60 years. It is completely fresh and completely funny because it is not rooted in anything other than human observation. It is character comedy of the purest sort. When Ray and Alan say that Charles Dickens invented sitcom, what they mean is that Charles Dickens, like them, wrote about people who we still recognise, archetypal people, whether that's Mr. Micawber or Fagin or any of those types that you still see today. Tony Hancock is a cinema type. And the proof of that is if you look at any sitcom following, you will see the same setup that Ray and Alan created. You've got a character who is a dreamer, somebody who has ideas of himself way, way above what is possible, but yet we can all associate with that. There's a kind of a pathetic yearning in a character like Tony Hancock that you see again and again, whether it's in Captain Mannering or Basil Fawlty or Del Boy, who is easily imagined as Hancock's son that he never knew. And you keep going on to Ricky Gervais's character in The Office. These people who imagine themselves to be far greater than the world will admit. But it wasn't just the Hancock character, it was the whole setup around him. You've got the wiser, older, savvier man, played by Sid James, who is content to simply pocket what he can get. And you'll see that come up every time, whether it's Private Walker in Dad's Army, or old man Uncle Albert in Only Fools and Horses, or the drunk old priest in Father Ted who just sits in the corner and swears occasionally, but is clearly milking the situation for all his worth. And the third character in that triumvirate is the Fool, first played by Bill Keller in Hancock, and Rodney in Only Fools and Horses, Private Pike. You can see Parlour Doobie, you can see where the pattern is going. Ray and Alan created not just the format, but also the template, which they then perfected with Stecker & Son, which was the most intensely small, almost microscopically devised comedy. It never left, in the first four series at any rate, all throughout the 60s, it never left that little junkyard. It was all set in that downstairs room with the skeleton hanging there and the stuffed bear. And it was all about argument between the older man and the younger man. And never was a line or a plot line repeated. It was endlessly invented. It's almost like watching somebody produce a piece of embroidery at an atomic level. Detail, like a snowflake, constantly reinventing itself. And that format has been the high watermark for sitcom ever since. I don't believe that there's ever been a situation comedy that was as intensely emotional as Sitcom and Son, nor as socially acute. Ray Allen still deny it. I mean, they won't have it. The third piece of evidence, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that I should put before you is Comedy Playhouse. You might not realise this, but after Tony Hancock left the BBC, Ray and Alan were invited to do a series of playlists, comic playlists, which they could write about any subject they chose. There were to be, I think, 14 in the first series, all of them half an hour, and they could make any subject they wanted. They could cast any actors that they wanted. They could star in themselves if they wanted. They could direct themselves. They could do anything. It was the Gorton and Simpson Comedy Playhouse. A quite unique honour. The BBC's never offered that to anybody else. Comedy Playhouse not only gave us the first episode of Step Down Son, but as it was transferred to other comic writers' hands throughout the 60s, it gave us more than 20 of the best known sitcoms, including certainly it gave us Till Death Us Do Part, that's what I was thinking of, and Are You Being Served, and Last of the Summer Wine, and all of it began with Ray Allen's Comedy Playhouse. They still have the effrontery, ladies and gentlemen, to say that they didn't invent sitcom. So I leave it to you to decide. If you think I'm wrong, then I want you to just quietly sit here in silence and glare at me. If you agree with my thesis that these are the men who invented sitcom, the most successful genre that television has ever enjoyed, I want you to applaud tumultuously. And please bear in mind those words that they wrote for Hancock. Magna Carta. The sheep mean nothing to you. That poor Hungarian peasant girl. Thank you.